Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable Absolutely. Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And good morning. Welcome to What's Next. My name's Jay Moran. Nayila with us today.
Yeah. I'm so excited to be back with you, Jay. We're Buffalo State partners.
Yes, here. We are. We're Buffalo State partners, and we're very fortunate to have with us the interim president of Buffalo State University, Dr. Bronita Duran. Dr. Duran, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Very happy to be here.
So, I mean, we could just start with a general question. Mm-hmm. How's life at Buff State right now?
You know, life at Buff State is great. We are enrolling. We're in the process of bringing in and enrolling our fall 2025 class. That's our project for the next few months. We've got a vibrant community. This time of the year, we have a lot of. We start our end of year celebrations. So we celebrated our honors graduates last week. Next week, we will celebrate our Greek. Organizations. We have a celebration for them to recognize the work that they've done. Individual faculties and individual departments will have their end-of-year celebrations for all of their students. In April, we do our honors convocation, which recognizes all of our dean's list and higher students. We actually formally have cap and gown and do the ceremonial convocation for them. And we do then end up in May with commencement, which we have been working on all year. We start next year's commencement the day after the last commencement because it does take a long process to do. And it's a very celebrative time of the year. That's where our students and their families can see the results of their hard work, of their fortitude, of their determination, and we can celebrate their success. Also, during our end-of-year programs, especially at commencement, we'd like to recognize many of our distinguished alums who will come back and give words of wisdom and greetings to our students. And also, at being part of the SUNY system, we also have the honor to award honorary degrees to individuals in our community or in the nation who have some connection to Buffalo State or to Buffalo State programs that have made significant contributions at a national level. So it's getting warm outside. You know, last night I was on campus at about 8 o'clock. Kids were out moving around. You could hear the music playing, you know, from the dorm rooms. So there's a lot of celebration going on right now. People are happy to be at this point of their academic career.
Now, Dr. Duran, you have a really long history at Buffalo State.
I do.
And you were in retirement and came back to Buffalo State.
So you did.
Must really love Buffalo State.
I just talked to a group last night and they asked me that very same question. And it was a group of our students, a group of graduate students. And they said, why did you come back? I said, I came back because of you. I came back because of the students. Every morning when I get up and get ready to come in, it's because I know the students are there and we need to give them the very best of an education, and we need to prepare them in the best way that we know how to have a good living when they leave us and to have a good life. So it really is about the students. It's about the mission of this fine institution. I mean, we have a mission of affordable access that leads to social mobility, We're very diverse, so we look for those aspects in our student population as well as our faculty and staff population. And so we really believe also that we're Buffalo's university. We sit in the center of the cultural corridor. We're in the center of the city. Community service and collaborations with organizations around Buffalo is one of our high points that we like to instill in our students. We have civic engagement requirements along with other their academic requirements that they must meet. And I just think over the 25 years, I've now been there for 25 years, so I get something, some kind of award this year because I've been there for 25 years. It's the best 25 years I could have spent anywhere in higher education. It not only is Buffalo State's mission, it's my mission. And I love seeing the students. They wave at me. They call me Mrs. President, and I mean, it's just that's the kind of place it is. It's a good place to be.
You mentioned social mobility. That's an interesting element of Buffalo State. Let's maybe get into that a little bit and tell us how you see that, how that determination is made.
Well, oftentimes we think of ourselves as the creators of Buffalo's middle class. With many of our professions, I mean, everybody knows that we are teachers are one of our primary areas, education. People still call us State Teachers College, no matter what our name gets changed to. So we provide that type of opportunities for our students. We have a huge television arts and performing arts curriculum. We have a lot of communication folks. Probably most people that are on TV, radio, newspaper around here, you can always find a handful or more of Buffalo State alums in that group. And as with the county's interest in cultural activities and bringing in more resources for the arts, the performing arts, we've become quite a hub. We have an amazing music department. Vocal as well as instrumental. And we have, dance and other areas that kind of help create a well-rounded student. So you may be an engineer, you may be a technical engineering major, but that doesn't mean you can't perform in one of the plays that they're going on over in the theater department. You may... be a sociology person, but you can also sing in one of the choirs. It doesn't have to be your major. We're big enough so that we can offer some top of the line, nationally renowned programs like our art conservation program, which we're only three in the country. But we're also small enough that we know each other. We can stay in touch with each other. We can have good relationships with our students. I call it relationship-rich education. Every student should be able to have someone at the institution that they can work with, whether it's someone that's officially assigned to them because of their job, like an advisor, or whether it's someone that's serving them lunch in the bingo kitchen, who they just happen to see and know every day. So, we're a pretty close-knit group. We like to celebrate our students. We'd like to meet and greet and celebrate each other. Right now for this semester, in collaboration with our one of our collective bargaining unions, we're doing a series called Collaborative Conversations, where about six times a semester, we take different topics that may be of interest to the entire campus. So, for example, we'll have one on crisis communication. How do you talk to people? How do you, deal with individuals in a crisis situation? We had one not too long ago where we talked about different types of personalities. We're a multi-generational place.
Right,
yes. Three, four, five, six generations, maybe. So sometimes those generations work well together and sometimes they don't. I have to admit, I'm not admitting where I land in the hierarchy of those generations. But there are a lot of younger generations that I quite don't understand. Hmm. Yeah. But in these sessions where we have lunch and, you know, spend about, you know, hour and a half, 90 minutes, we bring in a speaker, or we have a lot of experts on campus that can help us with that as well. We just talk. And everybody's there, from the cleaner who is cleaning the building to the provost who is in charge of all of the academic affairs. So we mix together, we talk, we do special sessions for our students to help them as well because they have issues that maybe they can't deal with. Roommate issues seems to come to the yeah, top of the, sure. You know, how do you deal with the roommate? But those things are kind of our soft skills that we use to try to create a more well-knit community, a more caring community, and a more supportive community. And it does help.
You know, I always say Buffalo State is different. I mean, I've been to a conservatory, I've been to an R1 institution, and I grew up on Buffalo State's campus, and I have never been to an institution where it genuinely feels like family.
It is.
You know, I know I can name all of my students. I know their names. I know who they are. I feel like I know total backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to how different Buffalo State is, particularly with the new, you know, title as university? Because that usually makes people feel like it's distant. Like you have these massive lecture halls and, right. You know, it's just research all the time and you don't really get that connection with right. The student.
Okay. Well, the university designation does give us some advantages, but they're advantages that we use in our own way. We will never have large classes like some of the Research One institutions. But just recently, we have earned our first doctorate degree in creative problem solving. It extends out of our creative studies area.
Okay.
So now that you can not only get your master's there in creativity, you can also move on to get your doctoral degree. So having the university designation allows us to do some of those higher level types of degrees. Of course, we have to work very carefully and in collaboration with our other SUNY institutions. We don't try to duplicate. We try to do the things that are in our niche. At one time, we did have a joint PhD program with UB with our exceptional education department. So students would get their master's degree from Buff State in Ex-Ed, and then our teachers had offices at UB in the corner of, you know, I know exactly where they were, where the PhD was carried out as well.
Okay.
So the university, it gives us a broader a sphere to reach for. In other countries, sometimes college is confused for high school. So it helps us with our international populations that we can bring in by being a university. So it's just a good opportunity. We're just starting to see the fruits of it with this first program that we received, but our international populations give us a lot of interest and a lot of hope.
You know, Dr. Duran, I'm glad you're here because as you're sitting in that spot where I had this conversation a few months ago with somebody else, a local leader talking about matching education with jobs in Western New York.
Yes.
And I understand that. And my perspective, though, is I have a sense that the value of liberal arts is waning because of this kind of consistent focus. And I understand you invest in education. You want to get something back out of it at the same time. But I'm just kind of curious from somebody who has a significant history in higher education. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, now you're at the top and you've got to make that match.
Right.
Just maybe take us through how you view that. Because, you know, again, to me, I hate the concept that our liberal arts are fading away or being made obsolete to a certain extent.
Well, let me say this. I am a 100% forever component of the liberal arts. To me, that's your finishing school. That's what gives you the ability to problem solve, to think, to be able to communicate with diverse populations, to be able to appreciate the places where you live and work. I think the liberal arts help you become a better citizen, make you more well-rounded. Now, a place like Buffalo State, where we do have a lot of programs that lead you right into a career, We also have a lot that lead you into higher education. But we have the advantage, and I guess it's because of our size, if I have to think about it, that we can combine those liberal arts with your academic or your professional aspirations. As I said earlier, the engineering student can be can do theater. We once had a football player who was in sports. He was in the sports track, but he actually played Othello and won. And he wasn't a theater person. And he just kind of walked in there and, thought he would try it. And at Buffalo State, he had the opportunity to do that. I'm not sure that would have been available to him at another institution. Mm-hmm. So we have not forgotten liberal arts, but we've also figured out how to start to balance it with the professions that are very much needed. I personally think that the professions that we excel in the most are those in the education area. We have all different levels of education, exceptional ed, and also with that, we have to pair that with some of the other social skills, like sociology, like dietetics and nutrition. Those things all go hand in hand now for a teacher or a person who's in the K-12 administration. So I think we're like perfectly positioned with the perfect population of students and the perfect faculty and staff to actually not lose that liberal arts, but to actually insert it in with the other activities that are required.
And I think that makes the best alum. Because
absolutely.
I've been to a lot of different schools, and we have by far the best alumni.
Exactly.
And I mean, I've had times where I've called and said, hey, could you all come to see my students in the show? No problem. They can be, on the West Coast and come, or in a different country, and they will want to make sure that they support. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to people's times at Buffalo State. Mm-hmm. And I know Jay is an alum. Yeah. Jay's daughter is an alum, which
absolutely.
I learned. And I grew up on campus. I have brothers and siblings that have gone to Buffalo State. What is so special about Buffalo State that alums want to connect?
The thing that I hear the most, and this is from alums who have been gone for 50 years and alums that have been gone for 5 years, they felt like someone cared. They felt like there was someone at Buffalo State, or maybe multiple people at Buffalo State, that really cared about who they were, what their aspirations were. They weren't being told, oh, no, you can't do that. They were encouraged to, to explore and to expand, and they were supported. And I can tell you as president that there's hardly a day goes by that I don't hear from a faculty member or a staff member about one of their students. I mean, and this is an individual student among a lot of students. Maybe this student is having an issue. Maybe there's some financial issue that's come up. Maybe there's a familial thing that's going on. But those faculty members know that. They know. The advisors know. And so they look to seek to help and support. And Jim will talk a little bit more about that when he speaks about our upcoming events. But they tell me all the time. I was with some of the alums for the 50 years or more, and that's an interesting group, of alums. And they talk to you right now by the teachers by name, what the specific experience was, how it helped them. And they feel like they were part of a family. I know my students are always a little surprised to see me walking around campus, but when they do, they stop and talk. They want to know. I have this trademark of wearing orange sneakers. Now, that's because I need the sneakers to get around campus. It's not a fashion statement. But and so now we're starting to wear orange sneakers a lot. And on Fridays, we all wear orange. We have Orange Fridays where we celebrate things and do things that way. But it's the human and the social connection. They all feel that they're getting good preparation for their life skills and for their jobs and a good education. But the special part is that they feel like somebody cares. They really care about who you are, what your successes are going to be.
And I think that speaks to our faculty as well. I'm not doing that because I'm a faculty member, you know. But I can say, even with some of my colleagues, mm-hmm. a lot of different schools, a lot of folks don't get to connect with their faculty. That's and right. also know that their faculty is out there doing research and right. in the field and doing mm-hmm. what they're supposed to really be doing as academics, but exactly. also mm-hmm. to be in the classroom teaching. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to kind of the difference at universities where you know, we are a teaching university as much as we are with research with faculty? And that okay. says a lot.
We are a teaching institution, and we do research, mm-hmm. but our research is what's considered applied research.
Okay.
So we're learning by doing. Okay, it's not so much laboratory confined. It's more we're out in the field. Mm-hmm. We're out in the field. We're experiencing. If you want to talk about it, education is all applied research. Mm-hmm. Once you get your basic educational principles under you, then you go out into a school, and you observe, and then you have a year of student teaching and those kinds of things. So we do more of the hands-on applied learning. We also fold it in with service learning so that while we're out in the field and while we're doing the research or providing, issues that we're working on, we're serving the community. And so that's a big thing. Last year, we were very fortunate to be designated as the voting, as a polling place for the voters in our area. Oh. So it's right on campus now. So that's where that community votes. Our students can vote there as well as anyone in the community. And just this past week, we had a panel of very esteemed political leaders, six of them, who spent 2 hours with our students talking about how to get involved in local politics. The point was, once the presidential election is over, you don't have to stop being involved. And so it was at 7 o'clock at night. I think it was 7 o'clock at night. We were in one of our largest lecture hall, and it was pretty full. And they got good experience about school board races, how to get involved, what other things you can do until you get to the next major election. The other thing I will say too about our graduates and about the classical, the liberal arts education is, we probably have more people in the legislature, more graduates in the legislature than any other school, and while that's a strict discipline of political science, criminal justice, public administration, it also requires a lot of people skills, and it requires a lot of knowledge about lots of things that are not taught under that strict curriculum. So if you're on the an environmental committee in the Senate, you know your process for being a politician, but you also have to know something about the environment. You got to know about trees. You got to know about water. You got to know about these other things. And I think that's where we stand out with that combination of the liberal arts with the practical education and training that we do.
Yeah, I know. Just to follow up on that, because it flashed in my mind. You said it. Former Congressman Brian Higgins,
yes.
Buffalo State graduate.
Yes.
I had a farewell interview with him down in his office back last year. And
right, and look at what he's doing now.
But he credited his history.
Yes.
Education at Buffalo State.
Exactly.
So, and I'll use that as the lead into my other question here before we go to break. The student of your first time at Buff State, your early days at Buff State, and the student now, has that student changed?
Oh,
if so, how?
Oh, yeah. That student has changed, but I think that student has changed everywhere.
Okay.
My first time at Buffalo State 25 years ago, students were younger, more traditional 18 to 24-year-olds, right out of high school into college, very focused on their academic programs, like the extracurriculars, but I don't want to say a little more naive, but a little younger. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess is the way to say it. They were, at that point, I would say they were more comfortable working with their professors and talking to their professors, but it was a more structured way. There was a more structured way. It wasn't a conversational way. It was them learning from the professors.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Now our students are older, all different backgrounds, lots of veterans coming in, lots of adults returning to school who have families, and you know it's not unusual for a Buffalo State student to work a full-time job and go to school. From that point, you have to structure things a little differently. Maybe they don't want to come back at midnight for a pancake breakfast. you know, or something like that. But you have to find other ways to, you know, to engage them and to support them. Online has been a big thing as far as creating online and hybrid learning modules that fit this new population's work style, lifestyle. I will say, too, after COVID, we're just starting to see students be more comfortable in larger spaces, being able to converse without the screen in front of them. You know, because you have to realize for, what, 3 years, almost 4 years, they were in isolation. you know, so you're seeing something different there as well. So, yeah, those are pretty much the differences that I notice. I'm the one that's walking across campus saying, hold up your head, get your face out of the phone, say hello to me, you know. And then some of them are like, who's this crazy old woman walking around in these orange sneakers? You know, who is she? You know, but because they are, you know, it's just a difference. It's just a difference. The whole society is different. You know, so
I'm Naila and Sari Cotillo, and I'm with Jay here. Cool. We're tag teaming on Buffalo State again, and I'm so excited. And we have Vice President Jim Finnerty here to talk about some amazing programs and initiatives that you have. And two of them I know for sure is the Bengala, because I'm lucky enough to be on that committee, so it's going to be awesome. Absolutely. I can speak to that. And our Grit Scholarship. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me today. You know, I was sitting here listening to Bonnie talk with y'all about what's different about Buffalo State and the community, and how I was going to talk about Bengala. But you really think our Bengala event, which is coming up here in just a couple of weeks on April 5th, it's really kind of a microcosm of everything you talked about. Like, it's not a stuffy fundraiser event with board members and donors that are kind of, you know, in their black ties. It's a family event. Like, this is an event where we have, you know, our current faculty are there, our emeriti faculty are there. We have probably 30, 40 students are going to be there with us. And it's just a really great fundraising event. It's our biggest fundraising event of the year. And it's all about scholarships. It's all about providing the support that we need for our students to be successful. So, you know, the event's coming up. It's April 5th. It's 4 to 8. A lot of the events that you have are later in the evening and sit-down dinners. This is a little bit earlier, more energy. It's going to be a lot of fun, where it's more of a cocktail-style event and everyone gets to sort of mingle and interact with each other. And really the key part for us is getting our students there. And our students are there, you know, they're part of the program. There's people talking about their majors and things they're doing. But more importantly, they're engaging with our guests and they're having really, you know, meaningful conversations and getting that experience and getting to talk firsthand to everybody about what they're experiencing at Buff State. You know, we're excited to have our chairs from last year are back again this year. So Judy Elliott and Tracy Sawicki are chairing it for us the second year in a row. They're both wonderful board members and alums of Buff State. Doing it the second time, they learned a lot the first time. and it's going to be another great fun event. And then also, I've got to mention Liz Grady, who is our event coordinator, who does just a fantastic job. So it's going to be a really fun event. And, you know, as we mentioned, it's for scholarships, but one that's real close to my heart is the Grit Scholarship, which...
Yeah, the Grit Scholarship is amazing, just like the food is at the gala, by the way. So, you know, most people think of really bad banquet food. It is not that you have amazing stations. The sushi station I will be stopping at first.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think, but to your point on the Grit Scholarship, a lot of folks kind of think it's just a gala that, you know, it's just raising money for the school, but it's really focusing on our students that need the help. And I can speak to the Grit Scholarship of, you know, recently I had a student whose house burned down and lost everything. And the Grit Scholarship is a way for students to get money who need it right away when they have something severe like that that happens to them. And it's like a very quick turnaround. I mean, our students are like surprised, like, I got the money like right away. So can you speak to the importance of the Grit Scholarship?
Yeah, absolutely. So the scholarship, it's about 3 years old now, but it's been about 7 years in the process. So we have our foundation board chair at the time was Mike Bonatotibus. He's a Buff State alum, successful business leader here in Western New York. He was the CEO of Millington Lockwood for a number of years and just retired. And Mike's own story is a story of grit. You know, he grew up in Lackawanna. His father worked in the steel mill. He got a chance to come to Buff State and went on and had an incredibly successful career. He wanted to start a scholarship, but he said, you know, I don't want it to be about GPA, not just on financial need. I want to give this money to students that need it and deserve it, and it's going to make a difference in their lives. And we started talking about, you know, what does that mean? And for Mike, it was all about grit. And he read the book from Angela Duckworth called Grit. I don't know if people have read it, but excellent book. I highly recommend it. And that's what he wanted to focus on. He wanted to focus on, you know, identifying students that, you know, have that character in them, that resilience. They've been able to overcome obstacles but need a little financial help. And really the struggle was, you know, how are we going to find that? How are we going to measure it and put that on a rubric? And Angela Duckworth has a great way of measuring it, but didn't really fit with what we were trying to do. And so what we decided is we all know it when we see it. We know grit when we see it. Unfortunately, from my office, I don't see it, but faculty and our frontline staff that work with students every day, they see it and they know it. And so we structured the scholarship so that a faculty member, when they demonstrate grit in a student but think there's something there that they need some extra support, they can bring that student to us. We jump on a quick 15-minute Zoom call. We ask them to explain, you know, how has the student demonstrated grit? What do they need financially? How can we help them? And then what else do they need? Because it's not just the money. Sometimes they might need, you know, some mental health counseling. They might need tutoring. We find a lot of times our students are just working too much. You know, they're working 40 hours a week. And to be successful, maybe they need to pare it back to 20 hours a week. And so we ask the mentor and the student together to commit to work together and to not just get the financial support, but do those other steps that they need. And sometimes financial literacy becomes part of that. Mm-hmm. And they sign a letter together, they make the commitment. And like you said, we usually get the money to them in a day or two. There's three of us on the committee. So it's myself, Mike Bonatotibus, and Itina Fareed Cook. The three of us review these students and cases, and sometimes we'll do half a dozen in a morning. And it's not only impactful for the student where it can change their life, but I think for the faculty members that are able to help a student and do it so quickly and to, you know, really feel empowered to do that, I think it's been great for sort of boosting the morale of faculty members where they feel like they can really make a difference.
I know we spoke earlier to Dr. Duran about alums, but you also work with alums and donors, and it's not an easy feat to get them to give money all the time, right? They're like, oh, volunteer some time.
Yeah.
What reasons have you heard from donors that are coming, and particularly our foundation? We've raised a lot of money for our students. What are some of the reasons they say, hey, I want to give my hard-earned money to Buffalo State?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, when Bonnie was talking about our 50-plus donors, for example, you know, the students may have changed, but the experience really hasn't. And our donors, whether it's, you know, 50 years ago or it's 5 years ago that they're at Buff State, they know they wouldn't have made it without somebody else's help. And the numbers are bigger now. There's more zeros after the tuition than it used to be. But the problem is still the same. And, you know, it's the grit that they know they had when they were a student. They see it in our students today. And they want to make a difference. And, you know, we talked earlier about the social mobility of our students. That's really what it's about, whether it's an alum or whether it's a corporate or foundation who wants to support Buffalo State. They know that that's what we do. We drive the social mobility of our students. And, you know, we look at their financial situation when they arrive and where they are 10 years after graduation. We move that needle more than anybody. And people want to be a part of that.
Why would you say people should donate to Buffalo State? Why should they come to the Ben Gala? You know, most people don't know much about colleges and universities, but it is seen as a privilege.
Yeah.
You know, but we need it at Buffalo State for our students because we don't have the typical student that went to, you know, a private school and, you know, with parents that have money to pay their tuition.
Yeah. Well, the first reason is you're going to have fun.
Yes.
Ben Gala is fun. It's going to be a fun night. And it really is. And, you know, we have opportunities for people to give in a lot of different ways. So we have sponsorship packages where people can get involved. We have the auction, which is a silent auction, which, you know, has opportunities at every different level. And then at the end of the night, we come together and call it Stand for a Student, where everybody literally stands up. We hold our black and orange pom-poms this year to indicate that you're standing for a student. And you're going to know that that's making a direct impact. All that money is going to scholarships for our students. And as you said, you know, we have a different, you know, type of student at Buff State that needs more support than maybe some other higher ed institutions. And it's not just the tuition, it's the non-tuition needs. It could be, you know, paying for housing or even if you're living at home, you know, you got to get back and forth to campus. You got to pay for your books. You need your bus pass. You need all those types of things. And, you know, we have great state support. We're able to keep our tuition low, but there's a lot of unmet need for even our commuter students still. So it can make a real difference.
I'm going to let you go soon. You're going to get out the hot seat. Sure, but my last question is, you know, what are some of the initiatives and programs we have on campus? You know, I know we have a food pantry that helps our students. We have YGO Health. There's, you know, a lot of folks don't necessarily know where they can always get resources or that we have resources for students that need it. So folks that are in the community that know, hey, I have a student or a family member or friend that's at Buffalo State, what are some of those things that they can do to get some of that help that, you know, we've been raising money for?
Yeah, I mean, I think about our incoming freshman class every year and the support that they have. But we have a program called Roar to Success, which a lot of our students, you know, whether they're commuters or, again, coming from across the state that live on campus, it's a cohort of students that come together and it's sort of just a microcosm of the much larger campus. And, you know, it starts over the summer. We have some countdown to college programs we do to help them get them ready. Once they do come together, you know, we have a book scholarship to help make sure they get access to their books, not just that they can afford them, but they actually buy them and have them for that first day of class. And, you know, you mentioned the food pantry, but we also have a student emergency fund, which is similar to GRIT, a little bit different, but it's more for, you know, the house fire type situation mm-hmm. or the flat tire that you have on your way to school. There's more support at Buffalo State than our students know about. It's usually not a matter of, you know, we don't have the support that's needed. It's they don't know where it is. They don't know how to get it. And when they have a faculty member or an alum who's been there who can, you know, give them that knowledge and say, hey, they're here to help. The support's there. You just got to raise your hand and ask for it. And there's a lot of great programs that can support them.
And now they know because you just shared.
All right.
So I'm going to take you out the hot seat now and bring Dr. Duran back. I appreciate you.
And before
sharing
I go, I got to thank you for your participation
yes,
in Ben Gala,
of
being
course.
On our committee and helping with our student program.
Absolutely. So I love our students. And, you know, I know that I joke about the food at the gala being amazing because it is, but it's a great time because to see our students in that kind of environment and thriving, I think it also shows where they get those leadership skills from. So it's not a surprise that they're in the legislature or in political science and in politics because they're getting out early on learning how to network, meet folks, and get what they want and ask for money sometimes, right?
And no donation is too small.
That's correct.
We will take it all.
Well, Dr. Duran, thanks for rejoining us on the conversation.
Sure.
Maybe just for a moment here, let's take a look at the national picture here a little bit. We hear about, I think even today there was news about the U.S. Department of Education. I didn't have a chance to read into it, so I don't want to get too specific on my part. Mm-hmm. But you must see this and you must talk to your colleagues elsewhere about this.
Absolutely.
What, I guess, if there were major cuts to the Department of Education, how could that impact a school like Buffalo State?
Well, before I answer that part of the question, Jay, I want to go back to let you know what how I get through the days since inauguration, okay? About 5 o'clock in the morning, there's some social media, I don't know if you still call it a tweet or an X or whatever, that may come out. Then there may be about 10 o'clock. That's been picked up, and it's going through with the news circuits and the national circuits. And then by maybe 5:30, 6 o'clock in the evening on the evening news, you hear that it's either been paused, retracted, or suspended, or something altered. So I try not to spend my day between 5 and 5 thinking about something that is not concrete and not specific.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that you don't have to have, you know, you don't have to have contingency plans prepared and you don't have to think about those things, but it can really be very stressful. It is for our students. I just talked to a group of students yesterday about how, you know, how stressful it could be and where they need to go if they need to talk about it, if they need to be prepared for it.
So students are they're
oh, they're
feeling
concerned.
This.
Mm-hmm. They're concerned. We have done, we do some training with them. Our chief diversity officer is here with us today. A lot of it comes through her office. We've done training with students, faculty, and staff on how to react if ICE comes to campus.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really a good process that we did. We tell our students, we give our students information. You know, we can't claim that we know everything about our students, but if there are undocumented students, if there's someone in their home who might be undocumented, or maybe we have a worker. You know, it doesn't just have to be the students.
Right.
We try to give them general information, which is valid. You know, this is where you can reach to find this. This is where you can go. So we try not to leap, okay? We try not to make any assumptions or any corrections or adjustments before we know that something is really going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so my message to my university is, we will keep doing the things that we do best, that's educating our students and serving our community, until we have to pivot and do something else. So to your question about the Department of Education, it could have wide-ranging implications, not only on the institutions, but on the individual students. You know, many of those students receive financial aid and could not go to school if they didn't have it, and that's at the federal and the state level. We are not as, will not be as impacted on some of the research dollars or some as some other schools were, but some of our sister schools are would really be, I mean, they would have whole departments that wouldn't be able to operate and provide whatever service they're providing. I do think, though, and this is just my opinion, it's kind of too hard to just unravel that quickly. I mean, you know, there's a lot of unraveling that would need to be done, and that's just my opinion.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But it would impact.
And
it,
I guess, and just to that, mm-hmm. and I think mm-hmm. your approach, starting at 5 in the morning to 6 at night, is probably a great way of doing it. Maybe I should take some notes here. Uh-huh. But to that, though, just the idea that there is a possibility that a supportive agency mm-hmm. of higher education mm-hmm. could be drastically cut.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, how does that coincide with you, someone who's spent your career in higher education? I mean, mm-hmm. I appreciate your calmness,
exactly.
Not leaping, but it, mm-hmm. there's to me, I just see this kind of an outrageous connection here.
Well, when in my first 22 years at Buffalo State, I actually taught in the master's program for higher ed administration. And the course that I taught was called The History of American Higher Education.
Mm. Hmm.
And I taught that course through the lens of the on a timeline from when Harvard began to now, as to what groups were included and excluded from higher education, when and why. So I kind of see this as another version of or an extension of that history of higher education. I think that some of the private schools who have, you know, really deep pockets and really deep endowments may not be as impacted as much as state schools or the smaller schools. I am relieved to be part of a state system because that gives us a cushion, I believe, and we're not a standalone institution. But, without trying to be political, just being philosophical.
Please.
You know, I remember the time when African Americans, well, first of all, women couldn't go to school. They couldn't, you know. I remember a time that the only people that were being educated were the politicians and the clergy. You know, you were either going to be a lawyer or a clergyman, you know. I remember the times going through the process where we created the technical schools and other types of other than just the classical trivium and quadrivium, you know, the classical schools, because we needed to address the Industrial Revolution and we needed to start to make things. I remember the National Science Foundation coming in. All of these things were created by our government, okay, for a purpose. So I think with what's happening now, if I'm going to get focused on anything, I'm trying to understand the purpose. Mm. What is this purpose? You know, I really think the reason why a lot of the executive orders aren't able to move forward is because they're too vague. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, and I think I was listening to probably NPR. That's all I listen to.
Well, get our marketing person there for that commercial.
My great-grandson gets a little disappointed when he gets in the car with me because it's, you know, it's not music, it's talking. But he talked about how judges that are making these rulings are not partisan about it. You know, they have to look at the facts. They have to look at, would this be enforceable? If it's not enforceable, why is it not enforceable? Does it, you know, they have to go through their rule of law. So I guess if I'm going to worry about anything right now and be able to address it, I've got to first understand why. Mm-hmm. And I go back to my roots as a history teacher and say, is this a way to reduce the number of individuals that receive a college education? Is this a way to select a certain group that should and a certain group that shouldn't? I don't know the answers to that. So like I said, I really haven't gotten too much into it now. And it will be difficult to do it until we actually see some more tangibles. But right now, we're not changing anything. You know, DEI is still DEI at Buffalo State University and all SUNY institutions. It's still happening. We're still doing programming. We're still having Women's History Month, you know, which is where we are right now. Right. We're still doing all of those things. So it is concerning. I have grandchildren and great. No, I don't have great yet. I have grandchildren who are in college now. I'm concerned for what their outcome is going to be. Are they studying something that's not going to matter? Mm-hmm. you know, are they going to be able to continue? I just don't know. But my philosophy is 5 to 5. I'm not worried about it. And then at 6 o'clock, if I whatever stuck today, then I have to start thinking about what would be some of our options. But so far, I have not gotten to the point where I've been able to make any directives or any decisions about how we would change anything. My most important job is to make sure that our students understand that and don't get distracted. I keep telling them, stop going to TikTok. Stop going, you know, go to a real news station. You know, hear, you know, read a newspaper. Do something so that you're not so stressed. Mm-hmm. You know, because once those things happen for them, then that impedes their progress. It takes away from their focus. It takes away from their hope. It takes an awful lot of hope for some of these kids to just be able to stay in school and to continue to do well. So you don't want them distracted in any way. So that's, I mean, that's, I don't know. That's no, kind of my answer, Jay.
I think that's a good answer. Well, I think, and there's so much in there, and I think what you've just last said about the idea of hope, I mean, you hate to think that the national political landscape is taking away a student's hope.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now, it's just so uncertain. It's very hard.
Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to your leadership. You know, I've seen it personally, but, you know, we have students, you know, I'm on the Senate, mm-hmm. and our students are actively always saying, okay, this is what we want to do. We want to be involved. And you hear them, and that idea of shared governance mm-hmm. and transparency
exactly.
is very real. And a lot of folks don't get that. And I think that speaks not only to the leadership, but, you know, a why Buffalo State
is great.
And, you know, one of my last questions for you is, you know, if I'm a senior in high school or if I'm a non-traditional student, if I'm a veteran, if mm-hmm. I'm in the military, why Buffalo State?
Because there's where we're going to optimize all of your potential. We are going to support you whether you like it or not. We want you to be successful. And we're also going to make sure we do everything that we can to provide you with all of the tools for your success. As Jim said, we have support programs. Some of them are privately funded. Some of them are state funded, like our EOP program. The SUNY has a partially privately funded program called ACE. Please don't ask me what that means. I know the A is academic. But these students get, you know, they get special attention. You know, now there's some qualifying, you know, conditions, mm-hmm. but they get special attention so that we make sure that they're doing their best and they're on track. So that's why you come to Buffalo State. And we have a good time. Nayila even had me dancing last year at the Ben Gala.
Oh, yeah. I sure did with the students behind her with the signs.
Yes. So, I mean,
a rave.
We have a good time. We have a good time while we're learning, while we're growing, while we're supporting. Many, many of our students become colleagues with their faculty, mm-hmm. and they go on and they research together, and they, you know, and they go into business together, and they do all these things. So it really is more family like than any place that I've ever been as well.
Well, I can give a personal attestment because yes. my boss at WBNY at Buffalo State is now my boss here at Buffalo Toronto Public Media. So I guess that's right.
I forgot
42
about
years
that.
Later.
Yeah.
I think that says something. I'm not totally sure. I'm not sure what it says about me.
He's great, and he's a great supporter of Buffalo State.
He is.
And
yes.
And I think we've given him about all the awards we can give him. So I have to make up another one on top of the ones that he's already received.
And he hires our folks.
And he does.
We have a lot of Buffalo State folks here.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much.
This has been my pleasure.
It's been our pleasure, too.
Dr. Duran, thanks. Nayila.
Thank you.
Everybody, thanks for being with us. This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members. And from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.